Welcome to a new episode of Forward Thinkers. My name is Daniel Fürk and my guest today is Nick Palmerini. He is the director of UK's National Innovation Centre Ageing and one of the leading voices on how ageing societies are reshaping our economies, our healthcare systems and our understanding of work, purpose and longevity. I spoke with him about why societies around the globe are getting older faster than they are adapting, what this means for retirement, prevention and productivity, and why aging might be one of the greatest yet most misunderstood opportunities of our time. If you enjoyed this episode of Forward Thinkers, make sure to follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts and leave us a review.
In an ever-changing world, we need to keep track of what will be next. Forward Thinkers is your 48 Forward podcast to discover the future. We are talking to innovative and creative minds from all over the world to learn more about what they are working on and what they think will change the way we work and live within the next decade. Are you ready to join the ride? Welcome to Forward Thinkers.
Nick, it's so nice to meet you here at DLD in Munich to talk a little bit about aging societies, about why we are getting older, and especially what that means for all of us. Welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you so much, Daniel.
So, in the preparation of this conversation, I was wondering, I think the first question that came to my mind, when did we realize that aging could be an issue and not only having benefits for all of us?
I think the demographers in the 50s started depicting what's going to happen to the planet. It never happened before in history that you had six generations living together, five of them working, voting, going around in airports, traveling all together. Never happened before. So literally we are at the forefront of many things happening in this center, like AI, for example. But aging is one of those as climate change. So I think we are now facing these two giga trends, the climate change and aging, as the, I would say, it's the issue on one side and the opportunities on the other. I think we should have to start framing from this perspective. Because obviously, demographers were seeing, let me say, the bare statistic numbers and were telling us that we're becoming a different society as it always been before, which now somehow help us see what they were meaning, and we're just living that life. And living that life means it's us, the subjects of that life. So what is incredibly also happening is that it's not someone else who's aging, it's us. Hence, the people in their 40s, 50s, 60s today, they represent this kind of a forefront of a society that never been on the planet Earth before. Hence the wonderful, I think, opportunity to shape a new society in a very critical, I would say, political and historical moment.
When I was younger, when I was a child, basically, people above 80 have been like really old. And I just told you about my Europe trip over Christmas. And we met a guy in Budapest at a bar, just random. He was sitting next to us all by himself and we started a conversation with him. And he was, I think, 86, but he didn't look like it. He was like full of energy. He traveled from the US to Budapest because his like ancestors came from Hungary and he wanted to visit some relatives over Christmas. He was sitting there at the bar at like 11 p.m. having a drink. And, you know, that was unimaginable 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Do we have to expect that this acceleration in life quality in an age of like 80 and beyond will continue looking at the next decades? So are we like in 20 years, would I say the same to you with like a 100-year-old?
So first you should see my dad, which is 95, driving his own wonderful mini Countryman Cooper around. And it's right. It's technically called equivalent age. So a person in his or her 70s in 1970 is very different from someone who's 70 today. So we're changing biologically also. I would say it's neurologically also, because I think the exposure to the internet, the data, process of information, very different since we were born, studying on books, change also how we recode or decode the information. So we're literally becoming different. Which doesn't mean that a 70-year-old person of today is like a 50 years old. It's not. or better. Biologically, it might be, but from the experience perspective, he's not. He has 20 years of experience more than a 50 years old person, which I think somehow I hope make you see what I'm trying to say, where I see the opportunity. So we're becoming different humans. They're not anymore the old people of before. By the way, there was, I think it's the cover of Times of this week. So it's becoming really one of the core topic about how we could redesign the society of the future, which leads to the point is gonna how long we're gonna live. Historically, we have the record of Jean Calment in Arles, which is the person in since we have record of birth that has been living the longer life ever. It's 124 years old. And nobody have overcome that, let me say, that limit. But we see a lot of, you know, data of super centenarians around 110, 117, which is, seems to be, I'm not saying normality, obviously, but it's growing in terms of numbers, bare numbers of people that are getting to that point. Meaning that there's a lot that it's helping us to get to that point, which I think help us to see what's the other side of it. What's the purpose to get to that point? Which I think is probably the real question for today, I think. Because I guess we all have a belief that how much innovation research is accelerating in AI. Sorry, I just mentioned it again, but I think it's important. It's helping us seeing how we can understand a lot more about what influences our process of age and how we can develop, you know, strategies, techniques to counter it. The research is in slowing the process of aging, okay? Someone want to stop it, someone want to revert. There's not yet a science that says that we can do it. But let me say, slowing, absolutely yes. Aging is malleable. Hence, I think the opportunity for us to live a longer, healthier life, which I think is the key word that we should have to use. It's absolutely on the landscape of this generation. So I think we will see a lot of progresses in the next 5 to 10 years, as well as there's counter effects. Climate, for example, we still don't know what's going to be the influence on us. So for how much we know what we could do in playing with our trajectory of and malleability of our aging process, we don't know yet what's going to be the influence on us. I think I am probably the first generation that will see it on his life trajectory. Hence, my father, 95, is coming from an exposure of pollution that is less than mine, and it's coming from a different genetic predisposition. So there's a lot that we will have to understand on that side. But I would say I probably might be a little optimistic about, despite things like wars that are somehow in the background of our everyday life today, that maybe could redesign a population like it happened with the boomers.
So the numbers are pretty clear. So like over the last, let's say, 20 years, we've seen that development. But at the same time, I've got a feeling that we are not adapting to that enough as societies. Especially if you look, take Germany as an example. We've got this whole discussion about how we are going to redesign our retirement system. But it just doesn't work because the numbers are not matching up. We've got fewer younger people. We've got more older people. They, of course, don't want to work longer, most of them. Some do, which is nice, I would say. But it also depends on the job you're doing. And I think even if we see a further development in life quality in an older age, we won't see someone working at the workbench with like 90 in the upcoming, let's say, 20 years. So we will have more people we need to kind of pay for, and at the same time, fewer people who can pay because they are still at work. Why are we so slow? And like, you know, we could have worked on that 10 years ago already because we've seen it coming. And now it's basically already here and the situation is just getting worse from that perspective. Why are societies so slow in adapting to that change?
I think it's not society. I think it's the political system because you're touching such a delicate topic, which is retirement. Retirement has been invented in this country 200 years ago, and the system is the same. But then the life expectancy was a couple of years after retirement. Today, you have 30, 40 years maybe after retirement, meaning that that system probably is broken. And nobody has the braveness, nobody dare to touch it. Why? Because obviously it's a very delicate thing. You start your elementary school, and you know that you will retire because you see your grandpa retired. So structurally, something that it's part of our culture. So we think that that thing will happen. I know what I'm going to say maybe not sounds very popular, but I think we're going to face an age of no retirement. I'm not saying for everybody. Those that had a very, you know, hard job along their life, they needed to retire. They needed the body to rest and just enjoy what it's the time that they will have available ahead. But many others somehow today are, let me say, forced to retire. Yes, a lot of people want to retire. Do not misunderstand me. But we have a lot of data telling us after a year, 2 years, says what I'm doing here, first thing. Second, there's a lot of people, if you ask them, I'm not ready to retire. Because for the first question you ask, I'm 70 and I'm feeling like a 50. So why should I have to retire now? Also, I think the system is not sustainable from an economic perspective. It is not. And I think it's something that probably government should have to face more sooner than later. You say the 10 years ago, probably it's already 20 years ago, but nobody wants to touch it. Why? Because the cycle of a voting, let me say, political leadership, it's too short. And hence you are just planning for, let me say, reforms that will take action in 20, 30 years, and they are not popular. But if you see countries like Denmark, for example, is the first country in Europe that has set 70, and everyone will get there and probably will be 72 and 75 and it will go literally higher and higher. Why? Because they're observing society and also they're observing the demographic trajectory and challenges. So I think the key word here might be we should have to redefine the word work and retirement. I think we should have to go there. Because if we redefine work in later life and we invent opportunities, logic, systems that also keep people to, let me say, express their dignity, their intelligence, their experience along the course of life for the benefit of the country. I think what we're missing is this point. It's just like retirement, always something individual. But if you're able to provide, let me say, growth to your country when you're 70, 80s, why not doing it? You say that people in their 90s should not work with their wrench, but maybe there's nobody else that can know how to use those wrenches. And I know it's a big problem in Germany, like in many other industrialized countries in the Western Europe. But say that, I think it's there where probably we should have to redefine the word work. And in the face of AI, if you are a smart or a good engineering or architect, you can project a bridge, a factory, an engine sitting on your computer and talking to a machine because you have the knowledge and the experience to filter and challenge what the machine is telling you. So you don't need to know how to use a CAD, CAM, whatsoever. You're just using the power of the artificial intelligence to bring you back the data, the information that you can provide the producer of something. So if you see from this perspective, it's a very different idea of work, and it's very important how much experience and knowledge matters later in life. That's why I think AI might be an equalizer on the famous digital divide between the younger and older generations, because you don't have interface basically anymore to use. You just need one simple interface. You say something, the system returns you something, you have the knowledge and experience to say it's right or wrong, correct it, until it's perfect. So I think it's something that probably should have to ask to rethink how competitiveness of countries could be reshaped. Nobody dare to say what I'm saying. Because if you say so, immediately think about what about a younger generation and the lack of work out there. But there is no one economic rule ever written that says that someone retires, someone younger find a job. It doesn't work that way. Hence, you have to find a different system to make it happen. And probably sustainability, and I would say the future of countries is based on this logic, even in a sector that it's coming, unfortunately, very relevant today, which is defense. If you see the hiring of soldiers in the Ukraine army, you see they start recruiting people in their 60s, 70s. Why? Not because they are on the trench, but because they know how to run systems, complex systems. And that's a type of profession that paradoxically could become a profession of the future.
And at the same time, to be honest, I think we will see some movement of people above 70 who are just bored. Because, you know, if you have like 30 years still to live,
you go fishing and, only.
Yeah, it gets boring at some point in time. So they need some kind of activity. And maybe we need to kind of rethink what that phase could look like. Maybe there are other activities they could do. Even people who had like a hardworking, like physically hardworking job, maybe we need to find answers to that to also not let them die lonely and bored someday, but to give them some purpose for those maybe 30 years that are
up. Yeah, and if I may say, there's another reason why we need longevity, would I drop in the discussion. So living healthier for longer, not living longer, period, healthier for longer. Because in Germany, you have a fertility ratio of 1.3 child per woman. We know that 2.1 is the bare minimum layer that allows you generational exchange. So that those few younger people that we will have in the future, they need to be healthy for longer to keep the growth of the economy, to sustain the system, to keep the economy running, but also to care about those that can't, you know, perform as well as later in life. There will be people that will be sick and we need somebody who's going to take care about them. And those have to be healthy. Hence, I think it's mandatory for countries just to redesign the whole system as well as start introducing, I would say, a heavy measure for prevention. We can prevent 80% of non-communicable diseases. Hence, we can do a lot in keeping a country healthy without necessary medical intervention later. It's too late when you're there, and we can't afford it anymore. If before we just maybe a discussion about the healthcare system itself, today it's a matter of the economic stability of a country.
Yeah, and at the same time, I think if we look at the development in like all kinds of medical topics, and we look forward to maybe the next 10, 15 years, we will be so much better in diagnostics, prevention. So we might be able to not cure, but to prevent all the major, like, big diseases that kill a lot of people today. Like, not very specific ones that will take longer, but, you know, heart issues, cancer, not by actually getting rid of it, but by preventing it with better diagnostics, but better prevention, which might lead to a spike in life expectancy. And I think, like, from my point of view, not being deep expert in that topic, but I already see a problem coming there because it might happen way too fast for our society to adapt.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the other, let me say, guilty ones that, I'm sorry, I'm just not putting the finger to anyone, but yes, the economic system itself, banks, insurance companies, I think they're sitting there observing without helping us, in my opinion, to help face what's going to happen. And it's going to happen, it's going to live 20 or maybe 20, 30 years longer than what you expected. So we need more flexible system. We need more ways of understanding earlier in life what could be way of preparing for that longer life. We're not helping younger generation to be prepared for that journey with, I would say, financial and economic products that can help them to get there. It's very static. It's very designed in a, I would say, quite old world, which I think helps seize where the opportunity lies. Literally, there is a need for a disruption, like Uber disrupted the taxi world. We need a far more flexible, smart, modern system on how we can plan our journey of life in the way of savings money, in the way of investing the money. And it's something that has to be taught when you're young. Otherwise, it's too late. And I think one of the risky things we see today for those that are not bothered of being retired, there are many, to be obliged to get back to work because they need it. And I think it's one of the two reasons we should have to put on the table today. But at the same time, you need more flexible way of engaging them in work so that it's not a burden, but somehow, with all the quotes, could be a joy. And I think it's where, I guess, it's the intelligence and the creativity which is needed from a societal and political system that historically doesn't have much, right?
So we talked a lot about challenges connected to that whole development, but is there actually, if we look from it from an economic point of view, who's actually benefiting from that? Like, you know, we all are getting older, we have more time to spend on this planet, but from an economic point of view, is there someone who might benefit from that whole thing?
Yeah, first of all, obviously all the pharma industry. We have a very well-structured business model of care, but we don't have a business model for prevention. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. Thanks God, we have a very good business model of care because it's saving us every day, okay? The point is that it's saving us because we're damaging ourselves, period. And that's a kind of a chain reaction, which is how you create economic systems, right? So again, I think there's a lot that can be done there. I'm sure that pharma companies could benefit a lot if they invent prevention system as well. I always do this example. If you, let me say, give a glucose monitor for your blood sugars when you are in, I don't know, first or secondary school. even in elementary school. You understand that if you eat chocolate and bananas, maybe create a spike. You learn it when you are 7, 8 years old. Hence, you probably won't have diabetes when you'll be 60 because you know how your body works. I'm sure that companies that produces GCM could do a lot in finding services around this idea and not making the business of waiting you have to diabetes. This makes no sense that you monitor your glucose. I'm talking about diabetes type 2, obviously. When it's already there, why you didn't learn 10 years before, 20 years before, what causes you those things? So I think like in every sector that is changing is keen. And then in the beginning, we saw, oh, that model is crashed. You find the new models for which companies could benefit anyway. So I think it requires some vision and support, public and private here. It's the, probably like the climate change is littered space where public and private could really work together for the growth of the economy and the health of the population. So for sure that industry will stay there. But I think the biggest industry is the industry that says in life, longevity is influenced by life. If you think about what influences our health, you have 7% climate, environment, not climate, because we still don't know yet the impact will be higher. 11% is the healthcare system, 22% genetic, but you have two big slices of the pie. It's 36 behavioral and 24 societal. 60% of the pie, it's made by behavior and society. In behavior and society, you have everything. You have driving, you have entertainment, you have what you eat, all those type of things. So while I'm talking, I think you can see the brands that are there, just ding, ding, ding. And each one of them has a role in the longevity of the population. Now, since I'm start working in this thing for the past 15 years, I think this is probably the first year or the second year where I see brands that has nothing labeled longevity in their, let me say, mission. So they're not pharmas, they start looking at this opportunity, meaning that hopefully there will be a game changer, a step change in how these brands will behave better to help us live a better life. And it will be an opportunity for them and for the population. I think it's really, you name an industry, I can make you an example. BMW is driving us every day here from my hotel here. Self-driving vehicles has a huge impact on longevity, just to mention one of the technologies out there. And you don't have BMW as a longevity company, right?
If we look at that whole thing, you know, in almost all Western countries, we've got a big discussion about migration right now. We've got like a right-wing movement. We are seeing people getting angry at migrants and so on. But isn't it true that in the end, although society with the demographic change we are seeing are not even able to survive without migration in the future? Because you already talked about the birth rates. We won't be enough people to take care of the older people, but at the same time to sustain our economy, to sustain our way of living without getting people in, right?
We know that they more or less were 8 billion and we're going to reach a peak of 10 billion and then we'll start shrinking. But there are countries, Germany is one of those, that by 2070 will start heavily shrinking. Meaning, first of all, you won't have people anymore. So you won't have, not Germans, you don't have people anymore on the ground. Now, you are touching, I think, the solution and the problem because nobody currently, from whatever political reasons, doesn't want to, you know, promote migration. But there's no other way to, let me say, have a country to function without migration. The country to function. And country to function means that probably you won't find people serving you in a grocery store, or worse, you don't have nurses helping you in a hospital. You don't have. We should have to start thinking that way. But my point is, if the political, let me say, landscape is going ahead this way, so for example, we'll never have, you know, migratory policies that will allow an easy, let me say, exchange. And you think only about population born and raised in the country, and it's everywhere. It's not in Germany. I'm talking about everywhere. The only, let me say, recipe you might have is just literally try to keep them healthy. All the attempt to have a birth raise in countries, first of all, is very expensive, and second, is not working. Even France, that historically is the country in Europe that worked the best in trying to promote the birth. And they did it because in the immediately after the war, they were the first country who literally built an institute on demographic research. So before that, anybody else, they understood that there was an issue. So they started doing policies a lot earlier. The cost of literally having a baby could be $1 million per baby, because you spend a lot of money in trying to convince those that are making children anyway, okay? And then literally the cost of intervention is $150,000 onward per baby, which is unsustainable. And it seems that these type of policies are not really working well. Korea, South Korea, which is the country which is somehow struggling the most, I think their birth ratio is 1-1, so lower 0-2 from Germany. They started doing a lot of economic incentives through the employers. I think it's the first time that they have seen a bouncing from, you know, going, keep on going down. But basically, if you are a father or a mother independently and you're having a baby, I think they are providing you 50,000 euros cash just to do that. And it's coming from the employer, which is incentivized by the government with this, I think, defiscalization. So there's something that requires some intelligence beyond the classic policies from countries.
If we're talking about migration, it's kind of funny that we are sitting here in Germany and seeing like an anti-migration movement in Germany, where we have a past that is kind of a perfect example of how migration could save the economy. If we look at the German Wirtschaftswunder in the 50s, that wouldn't have been possible without migration, especially from Turkey back then.
Well, I'm Italian from origin. We're a people of migrants elsewhere. And the funny thing is that now that we've been somehow blessed by the fact that countries like Germany, the United States, I would say it's everywhere, where you are full of Italians and you gave us work. And now we're just try blaming everyone, try to get inside our country because we've forgotten our story. So
let's hope that we will find solutions for that. And I think finding solutions maybe starts with actually being more truthful, and also from a political point of view, because we are always looking for those midterm solutions. Also, like if we look at the retirement system in Germany, we basically found a short-term solution right now to promise all the elderly people that they will get money, but we don't have a solution for the younger people that are basically financing that whole thing today. So being more truthful, being more transparent, and thinking a bit more long-term instead of always just for the next, you know, 4 years, might actually help.
Yeah, I'm not an expert. I can't say anything. So I'm ignorant about many things happening in this beautiful country. What I might say, on the contrary, as you say, the truthful, I think it's important that politicians understand that this is an opportunity. I think I keep on blaming getting old and try to push people to retire and just promising things that maybe are unsustainable, I think it's the wrong thing. We need somebody that will, it's believable enough, showing a business model that is strong enough to show that actually we're aging. We have to accept it, but instead of, you know, blaming it or crying on top of it, sees that if it's the reality, how we can turn this reality into something positive. And again, I think we did some example in our discussion today, how you can turn positive the fact that the country is getting older. Probably it's an asset, it's not a problem.
Thank you so much for your insights and the time.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you for listening. Did you enjoy the episode? Follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you prefer listening to your favorite podcast shows. Forward Thinkers is a 48 Forward podcast produced in the 48 Forward Studios in Munich.